Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Welcome. So glad you tuned in. Happy Monday to you. Hope you had a great weekend. Well, I'm especially glad you tuned in today because we've got a couple of very important hours for you today. So glad to invite back to the show Tricia Lott Williford, and we're going to talk about what it means to walk through grief and loss and how to reclaim hope again. And you know, this can be an especially difficult time coming up on the holiday season, and so Trish will really lend some insight and wisdom. How do you navigate those waters when everybody else seems to be celebrating, everybody else seems to be happy, while your heart is broken? Is it even possible to reclaim hope again? It is. It is. And second hour, we're just going to be you and me, baby, and we're going to talk about wisdom, what it is and why it matters. I'm looking forward to unpacking that message. Using WISE as an acronym, we're going to unpack wisdom and why it matters. Well, you know, winter is here, and no matter what the calendar says, when you have to pump your brakes, when you have to white knuckle the steering wheel, and when you have to hope you don't slide through the intersection, you pretty much know winter's here. So if you're driving, would you drive carefully? Be careful. And I hope we can just offer you some great encouragement on your route home, okay? So here's my question for the first hour conversation. If you're walking through a season of heartbreak, grief, or loss, tell me this. What do you sense God is saying to you in this place? What is he saying to you in this place? We've got 5 copies of Tricia's brilliant book, And Life Comes Back, to give away. You can call in any time during the show. Here's the number, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, or email me, Susie, at myfaithradio.com. So before I give Tricia a proper introduction, I want you to hear, this is a book trailer of the book, And Life Comes Back. And the reason I wanted to play it is because we as wives have this unbelievable ability to stop being thankful for our husbands. We can get critical. We can become nags. We can nitpick. We can just notice what they're not doing and forget all that they are doing. And especially as we enter the holiday season, just want to challenge you, if you're a wife listening today, if I can just grab your chin and have you just look up. And you know what? We're not perfect. Our spouses aren't perfect. But there's something so profoundly powerful about deciding to notice the things that they are doing. And so Tricia shared a story just like that. You're going to love this. Let's listen to the story, and then I'll bring Tricia on.
A few years ago, Rob and I had been married for 7 or 8 years, and I came to terms with a pretty ugly part of me, and I was ungrateful. And ungratefulness creeps in an ugly way that looks like criticism. And it looks like, I wish he would have done this that way. I wish he would have listened to me better. I wish he would have. He's not doing. He's not this. He's not that. And I needed to rectify that. I needed to find a different way of thinking. And so I started a journal, and I didn't even tell him. And I started a journal, and I wrote one thing down every day, something that he did that blessed me. Something that was encouraging to me. And there were things like, Rob brought me flowers today after work. Or Rob cleared the dishes tonight. Or Rob listened to me. I wrote these things down for 2 years. Every day. For 2 years. And there was even a point where he said to me, as we were climbing into bed one night, he was just silly about it, and he very laughingly said to me, I do so much around here, and you never even notice. And so I wrote it into the book. Rob thinks I don't notice. I do. I can't wait to give him this book. We went to Mexico for our second honeymoon, and that was in the year 2010. We went in July, and I wrapped up this gift for our 10th anniversary to give to him. So I gave him this book that was all of my words for the last 2 years, telling the things that he had done that had been so encouraging to me and the things that I had noticed. And he sat down and he read it all in one sitting. He just read it cover to cover. And he loved it. He loved it. And 6 months later, he died. He was gone in a matter of 12 hours. He was, he was healthy and he was with me, and then he got sick and he was gone really fast. And if I had waited to give that journal to him, he would never have known that I had been watching so closely, that I had been paying attention to the things that he was doing with me and for me, and the things he was giving me and the ways he was serving. And if I had waited, he wouldn't have it. He would not have read those words. So I gave him that, not knowing that everything was going to change so quickly. I gave that gift to him, and now that gift is mine. It's on my bookshelf, a reminder of one day after another for 2 solid years, reminders of the great things that he brought to my life.
That's Tricia Lott Williford, my guest today. Let me tell you about her. We'll get her on the show. She was an elementary school teacher before becoming a freelance editor and stay-at-home mom. She writes regularly for a loyal blog audience and is a sought-after speaker. She and her 2 sons live in Colorado. You can find her on the web at TrishaLottWilliford.com. Tricia, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Susie. It's so great to be with you today.
I love your heart so much. And I'm going to have you comment on that audio in just a moment. But if you wouldn't mind starting out with just if there's a passage of scripture that's been on your heart these days you could share with us.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and I've been thinking specifically about the holidays because that's the time for me. That's my dark season. And I don't want it to be. I want to still have the joy. And I want to find what is consistent in the holidays. But that's when my family fell apart. And so one of the things that I've been leaning toward is that first chapter in James where it says, consider it pure joy whenever you face trials of many kinds. And the reason I've been hanging on to that I honestly have to tell you in humility that verse has really just made me mad a lot in the last 4 years. And even before that, but especially since I was really brought into this season where I needed to face this so genuinely. And what brings it to life to me is the word consider. That Paul would write, consider it pure joy, because he's not telling me to feel joy. He's inviting me to think about the fact that perhaps there might be something good in this. And that's entirely different. It's a different verb. It's a different call to action. And it doesn't have anything to do with what I'm feeling, actually. It has everything to do with my decision. And when I look at that whole passage and how it talks about how trials bring about perseverance and perseverance must finish its work so that I can be mature and complete, when I look at all of that and unpack that and break it down, actually what it's asking me to do is to think about the fact that maybe there's something in this that might make me a stronger, more developed, more mature person. That's all that Paul is inviting me to do, to consider the fact that maybe this is going to be good for me in the long run.
Wow, that is amazing. Consider a different perspective. And, you know, that when you think about even the audio that we just played about, I'm just thinking of the wife today who's maybe lost sight of, because, you know, I know that there are wretched marriages, and I know that there are husbands who are absolute jerks to their wife. I know they're out there, but there's a lot of guys that are good guys that are just not perfect. And I'm talking to those wives, you know what I'm saying? Where we can nitpick and we can just keep an account of all that we do wrong. So maybe you're in a season of marriage you're not very happy about. Tricia, talk to that person in light of that passage you just unpacked. Consider just maybe. Don't feel emotionally happy just yet if you're not there, but consider. Speak to her about just considering a different perspective.
You know, it's so interesting that you would say that. I just met with a woman a couple of weeks ago, and she said to me, Tricia, I feel so much guilt when I read your story because your husband died and you loved him so much and you grieved his loss so deeply, but if my husband died, I just don't think I would care. And she said, I feel so terrible about that you would have to suffer this loss of your love story when mine isn't that great. And I said, oh, gosh, have you read my book, actually? And she said, no, I haven't. I've just only seen what you've written on your blog. And I said, well, let me tell you that there's more in the book that's not written on my website. And there's this story of the fact that Rob and I almost fell apart And it happened just a few weeks before he died, actually. And she said, well, how come you haven't written that on your blog? And I said, because a blog is a fleeting experience, but a book is a relationship. If you're going to sit down and read the book, then I'm going to tell you some things that might linger more and that might take a little longer to tell you than just something that you might stop in on for a few minutes as you're just scrolling through your daily reading. And so I told her about that, and she said, I had no idea that you didn't have this Mr. and Miss America love story. And I said, oh, no, our marriage was very real. It was very real. And she said, well, I think I might be able to hear it then. I think I might be able to tolerate your story if I can understand that you guys weren't perfect. I said, we were not perfect. We were very real. We had some serious hardships, and we absolutely came to an impasse and a crossroads in our marriage where we had to decide, are we going to tie a knot in this rope, or are we going to let this fall apart? Mm. And I suggested to her that I said, you know what, maybe even if you're not feeling this today, even if you cannot think of a single thing right now that is bringing you joy, maybe you could recall the things that once brought you joy. Maybe you could remember what was true of the man that you fell in love with. Why'd you say yes to him in the first place when he asked you out? Who was this person that you loved being married to at the time when you loved being married? Because it's possible that actually you just need to look a little bit outside of what's happening right now.
Yeah.
Maybe what he needs is an encourager.
Exactly.
Maybe what he needs is for someone to see what's great about him. Because maybe he's lost sight of it too. And so if you can be the one to come alongside him and be his cheerleader and his encourager and say, you know what, here are the things that I love about you, then it could bring strength and courage to his life, but also it could renew your marriage. Mm.
What a great word of wisdom. And I don't think we realize the power and the influence we have in our marriages and for our men. I mean, we can nitpick and they can feel so defeated and they'll quit before they even start, or we can build them up and watch them do things above and beyond what even they think that they can do. So such an important word. And we each have our own responsibilities. But as wives, I love the call to just start to notice the things that they do that you'd miss if they weren't there, the getting up every day, going to work or whatever that is. So mm-hmm. now back to your story, Tricia. For those who didn't hear our first conversation, would you mind give us a little background on how you and your husband, Rob, first met?
Oh, yeah. My husband and I met because our families knew each other. And his parents and mine worked closely together, and our two moms thought that maybe he and I would make a good match. And I was 16, and he was 20, and I was in high school, and he was in college, and I was all about this idea. And he, on the other hand, was 20 and in college and was thinking, I don't really need any help. Thanks, mm-hmm. Mom. I will ask out the girls that I want to ask out. And it took 3 years before he really considered the possibility that maybe I was more than just the girl next door. And so we started dating when we were 19. I was 19. He was 23. And we got engaged 3 months later. And so we are the walking testimony of matchmaking, because sometimes it can work. And moms and dads do know their kids. And we were definitely a success story.
That is a great story. So if you don't mind, tell us what happened around Christmas of 2010 and your husband became ill with what seemed to be the flu.
Yes, we thought he had the flu, and it was just a couple of days before Christmas. And I took him to the emergency room, and they ran a series of tests. And one of those tests came back positive that he did have the flu, influenza A, they told me. And they said, he's not going to die, but he's going to feel like it. So take him home and keep him quarantined and keep him safe in his bedroom and ride out this storm, because it's going to last 10 to 14 days. We're so sorry your Christmas has been ruined, but he's going to be okay. And they said, if he has any trouble breathing, call 911. And so I took him home. I did exactly what they said, and I threw a temper tantrum between me and God because I was so upset that Christmas had just been ruined. Mm. But I actually had no idea how much Christmas had been changed forever, because the next morning, it was before 5 o'clock in the morning, Rob called me into our bedroom. I had slept in another room because he was to be quarantined. And so he called me into our room and said that he couldn't stop breathing, he couldn't slow down his breathing. And I remembered the words of the doctor, and I called 911 immediately, knowing that he was having this respiratory distress. And he died before the paramedics could get there. It was just in the course of about 2.5 3 minutes, he fell to the ground, and I knelt over him and tried to rescue him. And he regained consciousness just one more time, and his eyes met mine. And I fought for him and screamed his name and held onto his shirt as I watched his spirit just leave his body. And he died right there, December 23rd, 2010, in our bedroom, 2 days before Christmas. I was 31 and he was 35, and he was only sick for 12 hours. And it was a misdiagnosis. But it turns out that he did have the flu, but that's not what killed him. He had a strep infection, a septic infection in his bloodstream that attacked his heart and his lungs. So he actually became toxic to himself, so that even if they had discovered the septic infection, there's nothing that they could have done to rescue him. It was just, he was in too much distress. So it happened so quickly, and everything's been different since that morning.
And that was 4 years ago.
Yeah, quite unbelievably.
Wow.
I can't believe we're coming up on 4 years.
Well, you are so honest in the book. I love your writing. I mean, just as a writer, you're such a good writer. But the rawness with which you tell your story is so important for this story, because you, as any true marriage, if we're honest, we all have those raw, gritty times where you're fighting wrong and you're saying things you wish you wouldn't and all that. We all do that. But to have you just fighting for him and begging him not to leave you as he's dying, it's just so startling and jarring to our spirits. And I want to pause there, because I want to just, again, speak to the person who is, because marriages are just dying off so fast, when it gets hard, because it feels so hard, they're like thinking, this can't be right. But those moments are just like a blotch on this canvas, because you step back, you still have this person of great worth and this marriage worth fighting for. I mean, when you think about those moments when you guys were fighting, and he was on the road a lot, he traveled a lot. There were legitimate reasons to have fights. But, you know, to be so young and lose your spouse, Tricia, talk just again, if you wouldn't mind, to the person who's just as sick and tired of their marriage, but there's not any overt, there's not abuse, there's nothing like that. It's just they're such a tangled up mess of stuff. What can you say to them to bring some perspective to them?
That is such, I mean, isn't that what marriages are made of?
Yeah.
You know, it's just those little things that add up to a whole life of conversations and arguments and the decision to choose to be thankful. And so what would I say to that person? I would remind you that, I guess I would say similarly to what I said to the wife a few weeks ago when I spoke with her, and I just said, I would encourage you to look at what is good, to look at what is good, and to start with making a list. Start with writing down one thing that you're happy about right now. Because I would remind you that when we marry a person, we welcome them into our lives, but we also absorb their sinful nature into our lives. But the same is true that they absorb ours. I certainly drove him crazy. I drove that man crazy. And I'm sure that there were many, many seasons where, really probably some long ones, where he just thought, I'm not sure. I'm not sure this is what I bought into. I'm not sure this is what I signed up for. But it is. It is. When you make a promise, you have a choice to keep it or to not keep it. And if the person that you love is genuinely a good person, look to find that. Find the good.
Tricia, did you have any regrets once he was gone? Just because, again, especially when we're young in marriage, we can fight like there's no tomorrow. We can get mad. We can be highly offendable, all those kinds of things. And I think as we get older, you know, I'm just noticing so many more things don't matter that they used to. And we can keep a unity that it's just easier to get there for us now that we're coming up on our 30-year anniversary. But I do know, looking back, I'm going, man, if I would have known that back then. Are there any kind of regrets, even in the way you fought, the way you showed up for life, looking back, knowing that your marriage time would be so short?
What's interesting about that for me, Susie, is actually those regrets are emerging as I'm getting to know my sons better. My older son, Tucker, is 9 years old, and he is absolutely in every way his dad. He looks like him. He talks like him. He thinks like him. He even walks like him. he has Rob's stride, and there's no way that he could have learned that from him. It's just something that's part of his genetic composition, that he's made like his dad in every way. And as a parent, it's easier, I think, for me anyway, it's easier for me to have more grace for my children sometimes than it is for me to have it for my spouse. And there's things that I learn and understand about Tucker that I think, oh my goodness, you got that from your dad. That's your dad right now. Mm. And for example, there's things that I think, I discover patterns of Rob's thinking that emerge in Tucker's behavior, that all of a sudden I discover that Rob's motives were not bad at all. I just didn't understand him. When he wanted me to, there were times that I just felt like he was controlling me, maybe. No, it's not that he was controlling me. It's that he really liked to have things in order, and Tucker's that way. Tucker does better if the toys are put away. He appreciates that. He likes for people to take responsibility for the things that are theirs, and he likes to know that there's structure and routine, and that's how Rob was. And there were times that he asked me to do things or became frustrated with my artistic nature or my cluttered side or things like that, that I would just think, oh, you have got to let me be free. I am this butterfly with wings. I've got to fly. Don't try to control me. He really wasn't trying to control me. Not any more than Tucker tries to control a situation. It was just his nature. And I wish I had understood that then. I wish that I had understood that he wasn't trying to change me. We were just trying to create a life together. And we were such very different people, such very different people. And I wish that I had had that lens. I wish I'd been able to see how he viewed the world rather than just thinking that he was trying to hold too tightly to my strings.
Mm, that is such a great example. And in Corinthians, it talks about, you know, love believes the best. And I think when we kind of acquire a laundry list against our spouse, we not only stop believing the best, we assign motive and believe the worst, even when it's not there. And so That is just such a profound lesson. I mean, that one thing could save marriage and even bring joy and happiness, I think, to marriage, if we could say, okay, Lord, show me every time I'm assigning a motive, every time I'm believing the worst instead of believing the best. Well, we just have a few minutes before we take a break, but is there anything else that you're seeing in Tucker that's giving you a greater understanding of your honey?
Oh, my goodness. He is just like his dad in every single way. I'm understanding Rob's leadership. There was this time recently where we found a snake in our driveway, and I didn't know what to do. I did not know how to handle the situation, because if there's anything I'm afraid of, it's snakes. I cannot handle on any level anything that slithers on the ground. And here it was laying across the driveway. And Tyler suggested, he's my younger son, and he's an artist and thinks a whole lot more like me, and he said, I think we should just get in the car and go away and have some ice cream. I kind of agreed with him, and yet here we were. We're going to come back, and it's still going to be here, or it's not going to be here, and then where will it be? And so Tucker just took the whole matter in hand, and he said, Mommy, here's what's going to happen. We're going to get in the car, and Tyler is right. Now is the time for ice cream. We're going to get in the car, and we're going to go, and when we're gone, we're going to call the neighbor, and he's going to come over and see what's going on with the snake, and he's going to take care of it for us. So get in the car, because this is how we need to handle this situation.
My goodness.
And he just showed so much leadership, and it reminded me so much, again, of Rob, that he would take a situation in hand that way, that he would see, you know what, someone needs to be the leader here. And I'm sorry, but as a mom, I kind of lose my mind if there's a snake.
Yeah.
But my fearless son, that there are other things that scare him, but snakes are not one. And he took that situation and just said, no, Mommy, here's what we're going to do. This is the first thing, here's the second thing, and here's the third thing. And so I need for you to just step in and get in the car and be safe. And it reminded me so much of his dad, both in his leadership, but also in his protection, for sure.
How old is he, or was he when that happened?
That was not very long ago. It was within the last couple of months. So he was 9.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's amazing.
He's such a little man. He really is.
Wow. Oh, I have so many more questions for you. Talking to Tricia Lott-Williford, we've got 5 copies of her beautiful book, And Life Comes Back, A Wife's Story of Love, Loss, and Hope Reclaimed. If you're walking through any kind of grief, I actually think this book will help you. You got questions for Tricia? The phone lines are open, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, or email Susie@myfaithradio.com. Don't go away. Drive careful. We'll be right back. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Tricia Lott Williford about her story, a wife's story of love, loss, and hope reclaimed. Title of her book is And Life Comes Back. So beautifully written, full of wisdom. Got a few copies to give away. If you've got a question or comment, now's the time to call. 877-933-2484. We've got Tim calling in, I believe, from Madison, Wisconsin. Tim, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hey. What's your question today?
My girlfriend has a very similar situation to Tricia's. She lost her late husband about 2 years ago. It's been very tough for her. The hardest part is they both had kids from previous marriages. And his children, a couple of them, hold a lot of bitterness and blame. And they continually bring that up, especially coming up here in the holidays. They, you know, play little head games and just cause a lot of grief for her. And I don't know if you have any advice for some of that, because she already has a lot of guilty feelings. They argued not long before he died, and it's like that she never got a chance to say some of the things that you wrote down, and I think it weighs heavy on her heart.
Wow. What do you say, Tricia?
I'm sure that that does weigh heavily on her heart. And I, you know what, I wish that I could speak into what she is experiencing. Did you say, Tim, that it's his children or her children who are?
His children are causing the blame and have caused, they don't know the circumstances. It was seemed like a power struggle apparently toward the end of his life, where the oldest daughter was, for some reason, vying for his attention more than his wife, and it seemed like every time they turned around there was a battle, and then now it's been almost to the point of, I don't know, it seems to be almost lunacy, but she blames her for so many things, and
she's got to be hurting so much that she is looking for someone to blame. Before Tricia jumps in, are his kids adults, or are they under her care?
They're in their late 20s.
Oh, wow. So that seems to be a different dynamic, right, Tricia, as far as what boundaries maybe even that she could set? Or
it is. It does sound like a different dynamic. And something, you know, one of the things that I feel like I'm unfamiliar with, and it's a grace that I have so much, is for women who are dealing with the challenges of a blended family and the challenges of raising someone else's kids or grieving with someone else's family. And one of the things that she may find is that there isn't enough room in her relationship right now with his children to hold both her grief and theirs. And that's a really difficult thing when there is so much to grieve. It really is the kind of darkness that can hold both of you, or both of them. It can. It's big enough. The grace of God is big enough to hold all of this pain. But the darkness feels so heavy that sometimes it's so difficult to penetrate that it feels like, you know what, there's not enough room in your life for me to be upset too. And so what I would say is I'm not sure that I have the authority to speak into your girlfriend's perspective, but what I would love to say to you, Tim, is what an opportunity you have to come alongside her and to encourage her and to be the voice of truth in her life and to remind her what is her responsibility and what is not, and to help her to see that grief like that is bigger and it can be so consuming, especially when we don't have a full perspective. And of course we don't have a full perspective. And with, you know, just the nature of us being people. And so I'm sure that the grief that his children are feeling is very real, and it only makes hers harder.
You know, Tim, and you're, excuse me, I'm going to just jump in. You're going to get a copy of Tricia's book. And what I appreciated that you did in that book, Tricia, was lay out how you could only carry so much. And so you made yourself not responsible for everybody. At first you were accommodating, sorry you lost your friend, but you were the one who lost your husband, but kind of coming to an understanding of you can only handle so much. And I'm wondering if this book will help Tim and even his fiance or his girlfriend understand that it's really okay to have your limits, for crying out loud, when you're walking through grief, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things that I learned was that I was responsible for myself and for my two children. And we were operating on a lifeboat that was just big enough for the three of us. And if someone pushed on one side of that boat, we were going to topple right over.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to learn very carefully the balancing act of being inside and knowing my limits. And so maybe that's something that you can be helping her with right now, is to understand how to keep her balance.
Yeah. Tim, that's probably the best thing you can do for her. And I pray that she doesn't feel obligated to these adult kids, because she should not be the punching bag right now for their angst and their anger. And thanks for your call. 877-933-2484. And that leads me to my next question. You drew this parallel between the early days of your grief and the early days of an infant's life. And help us understand those stages of grief, because, I mean, I just feel for Tim's girlfriend, because combined with her own regrets of her own mistakes and then people kind of pointing to her family members, how is she ever going to untangle that thing? So talk about really the person who's been just so profoundly affected by the loss. What does grief look like?
What does grief look like when you are in the middle of it? Well, it's kind of like, I wish that I could say that it's a very linear process, that there's this step and then this one, and that we can follow a map from 1 to 5, and then we can know exactly where we are in the process. But actually, it's more like a ball of rubber bands. And there's grief, and there's anger, and there's guilt, and there's freedom, and there's grace, and there's forgiveness. And there's sadness, and there's discovery of new things, and there's denial, and there's acceptance, and those come in every order, and they hit you at any degree at any time. And some things can just trigger a different emotion that you did not see coming, that all of a sudden you feel, and that's when it gets most complicated, is when you feel both guilt and anger at the same time, or grief and freedom at the same time, because they're not linear. They don't separate themselves into one another, and everything feels like it just can hit you all at one time, because it's such a mess of linked emotions. And that's what I would say about the process of grief, is that it's not a map to follow. One of the things that you have to learn, that I learned, is to be present with whatever you're feeling right now, and to allow yourself to feel whatever it is right now. A friend of mine gave me this great advice that I just took and held so tightly to, and she said, you know what, when you are feeling overwhelmed, sit down and let yourself feel it. When you're feeling the grief, or you're feeling depression, or you're feeling like you cannot do this for one more minute, sit down and let yourself feel that, and then get up and do the next thing. And that was so freeing to me, that I didn't have to sort out every emotion all the time. I didn't have to put a name to something, or a motive to something, or a cause and effect analysis to whatever it was. I just needed to feel what I was feeling right now, and allow myself the grace to feel whatever that was, and then to just do the next thing.
Great advice. Anything that wasn't helpful from well-meaning people, friends, things that just weren't helpful?
Expectations. Expectations are not helpful. I had a friend who said to me early on, Tricia, here's what we're going to do. We're going to set a date on the calendar, and we're not going to ask anything of you, and we're not going to let you ask anything of yourself before that date. And he chose randomly July 1st. And he said, listen, that's 6 months from now. You don't have to do anything before July 1st. So anything you do is a bonus.
Wow.
You don't have to do anything. Anything that you do is a bonus. And if July 1st comes and you feel like you need an extension, then we'll just reevaluate that. And we'll just, you know what, then we'll say it's August 15th, or we'll say it's September 1st. But you need to walk right now in the freedom of healing. That is your only responsibility right now.
What did that do for you?
Oh, it was the most freeing, freeing gift to be able to realize that the expectations that I had on myself, or that anyone else even placed on me, I could just lay down those chains. I did not have to do that. And once I was able to realize, you know what, if I'm able to make it to the grocery store, that's totally a victory. But you know what, no one's expecting me to. So I will count on those friends who are offering that help. I will rely on that, and I will not expect myself to do more than I can do right now, because actually there are no expectations. And when you can look at that and realize that anything you are able to do is frosting on the cake, it is a very freeing perspective.
Wow. Well, let's talk a little bit about how you processed your perspective on God. I loved this quote. I thought it was very insightful and very important. You wrote, God didn't say yes to me. He heard the screams from my bedroom, but he didn't answer as I begged him to. God didn't say yes the way we asked him to. He promises new life. We think it will happen here. He promises healing. We think it'll happen here. He promises everything will work together for our good. We think it will happen here. Maybe it will. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes his faithfulness shows up differently. There is such an important lesson here for us as believers, because we want it all here now. But I just been thinking so much about eternity and our time on earth, Tricia, is such a fraction of the time that we have ahead of us. And so I'm wondering if you could just offer insight on looking beyond the here and now, because I think we mess up our theology when we base too much on what happens during this small fraction of time that we have on the earth.
I think that one of the things I've been guilty of is laying out my request before God and then expecting him to show up in the ways that I'm asking him to. And sometimes, as exemplified in my own story with the fact that God did not choose to give my husband the healing that I was begging for, but he did offer me intimacy with him, and he did offer me strength, and he did offer me the courage that can only come with intimacy with God. And he offered those things, and he showed up in a different way. And very truthfully, if my husband had been rescued, and if he had come down the stairs that day, and if they had said, you know what, we really can't explain it, but he's here, and he's awake, and he's alive, and he's breathing, and he's hungry, and we need for you to get him something to eat, that would have been a miracle. No one would have been able to explain what had happened or why, but I would not have the intimacy with the Lord that I have, because he carried me through that darkness and has delivered me with life and safety on the other side. Mm-hmm. And so God did not come through in the ways that I wanted him to, but he has offered so much to me that I would not have known otherwise. And that's what I think I need to remind myself of, even still on a daily basis, is to remember that God is for me and he is on my side. And so when I ask him for things, he is a God who hears, he's a God who listens, and he's a God who is responding.
Yeah, and these present trials are going to offer a glory that far exceeds them all, right?
Right, absolutely. And that when I can look at, I guess it goes back to James, as we were talking about at the top of the hour, that if I can consider perhaps the fact that maybe there's something in this that could be good for me, then I can look at what maybe God is offering that is not what I was expecting, and it's certainly not what I asked for, but maybe it could still be good.
Ask yourself that question listening today. Just think about that. In your current battle, your disappointment, your heartbreak, what in this could be good for me? What in this could God redeem and to make me a deeper, more profound, maybe wiser person? I can point to something right now in my own life of a heartbreak and a disappointment, and I can tell you, God's changed me for the better because of it, as much as I've hated it, you know. And in the book, though, you write your younger self a letter on your wedding day. And if you don't mind, I would love to just read a portion of it and have you just speak to it, but also especially thinking of young women listening who maybe aren't married yet or are newly married, just some advice that you could offer. And this is so beautiful, but you write, "This really will be the happiest day of your life so far. Believe it or not, some other good ones are coming too. Hard to imagine, I know. You may want to stop reading now, young bride. It won't always be as bright as it is at this moment of yours with your ringlets under the satin veil, and I'll give you a few headlines. I know you really can't imagine moving across the country, but you will, and you'll love Colorado. It's as great as they say. You'll get pregnant easily, but hold this loosely. You won't get to keep each of those children. Miscarriage will visit your home half as often as conception. But you do get two little boys. I won't tell you their names. I want you and Rob to name your sons together. Nobody should rob you of that joy. I know you think you want girls, but I'll tell you what, you won't want to trade those little boys for all the girls in the world. You're made for boys, Tricia. You're in for the ride of your life with those two genetic composites of you and Rob. One will be serious and linear, a thinker, a scientist, an athlete. One will be silly and funny, a comedian, a creator, an artist. Brace yourself. You get 10 years, Tricia. 10 years, plus the 2 years you've spent dating him. But then you have to give him up, sweet girl. You can't imagine the story, the way it unfolds, and you wouldn't believe it if I told you. You would miss out on the joy and the beauty of the decade if you could predict how it ends. So live it, dear girl. Say yes. Say I do. Over and over. Live this day and live the next. He's so worth it, every day of it. May each blessing be yours, dear girl, and may you be found faithful. With deep affection, Mrs. Tricia Lott Williford. Wow. Speak to that.
That's powerful stuff right there.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I listen to that, and I just think of that young, freckled, fresh-faced girl on my wedding day. And I look back, and now I know how it ends. I know how the story ends. And one of the things that I'm thankful for is that I didn't know then, because I couldn't have known how beautiful it would be, because I would have been too afraid to walk through how it ended. And it was great. It was really great. Mm. We had a lot of great fun together. We had a lot of important conversations, and we lived more than 4,000 days of marriage together. And I wouldn't trade that. I would not trade that, even for the darkness that came later. So the advice that I would give to a young bride or to a young couple right now is to live in the moment, to be very aware and to be very thankful, and to continue to look for ways to love one another and to be thankful for each other. And don't worry about what you don't know. Don't worry about what you don't know. There's one of my concerns in telling my story is that people could walk away with a spirit of fear. And that they could listen to it and think, oh my goodness, what would I ever do if that happened to me? What would I ever do, and how could I possibly survive it? And I would have wondered those very same things. And I would have wondered whether it was worth it or not. But I lean into that now, and I just think, the truth is that you don't know. The truth is that you don't know what's going to happen. And you could choose to be consumed with fear over that. Or you could choose to say, you know what? I trust that God is going to... The same God who gave me this blessing will be the one to walk me through whatever is to come. So that's what I would say to a young bride or to a young couple, is to live in the moment and to trust that the same God who gave this person to you is the one who will strengthen and support your marriage, and also offer you whatever healing it takes, either within your marriage or after your marriage, to be who he wants you to be.
So beautiful. Talk about the title, And Life Comes Back, how you came up with that, and just... unpack that for us.
Well, I chose to have the word "and" in the title, as you can see. And the reason why is because, yes, it's a story of life coming back. It's the story of a girl finding her balance again. It's the story of children discovering that there is life after loss. It's the story of all of those things. But I really wanted the word "and" at the beginning of the title, because "and" is a word that is... it seems like it's a forgotten word in the English language. It's a conjunction. It brings two parts of a sentence together, and it shows that there's more than one of something. And the reason that I wanted that there is because when you see the word "and," it tells you something came before that. And I wanted to be clear that, yes, this is a story of life comes back, and it was really difficult before that. Mm. Yes, my husband died. And I had 12 years of life with him. Yes, all of these things are true. And this happened before. And I really wanted that to be part of the story. I wanted so that anyone who's walking through this will understand that there's room and grace in the story for wherever they are in the journey. Whether they're at the place before the valley or the place in the middle of it, or if they're starting to see the sunshine again, all of that is it's all part of the process.
I was just going to say, that's exactly how I took it, that it was like a sentence in a story that's still being written. I love it. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love it. Well, we just have probably about 5 minutes left before I ask you to pray. Just have a few more questions for you. One is, give us updates on your sons. I've read one of the stories in the book where one of your boys is asking you, is he really gone? Is he really dead? And I want him, and I want his bones, and I want his muscles, and I want him. And yeah. It was heartbreaking. But tell us again their ages and then just how they're doing.
Well, when Rob died, they were 3 and 5, and it's been 4 years, and now they are 7 and 9. And one of the things that's very challenging about being their mom and walking through this journey with them is the fact that because they were so small, their cognitive understanding of death and of life was very limited at that point. And Tyler was only 3, and now he's in 2nd grade. And Tucker was 5, and now he's in 3rd grade. And they're understanding more now, actually, of what they lost, because they couldn't really understand that then. But now they experience things like, well, now I'm on a football team, and the other dads are out on the field coaching their kids, and my dad isn't here. Or, well, there's a whole team of dads at our elementary school who are the dads, the watchdog dads, who take turns to stand at the entrance of the school and keep the children safe inside. My dad would have wanted to be there, and he's not here. Look what I don't get to add to this story. Look what I don't get to bring to our school. Look what I don't have that the other children have. And I just, the other night, I was reading to them from the Jesus Storybook Bible, which is just my favorite. It's my favorite book. My favorite version of the Bible for children, but it's also just so fruitful for adults. And we were reading the story of Abraham and Isaac, which is one of the more troubling stories in the Bible, that God would ask a father to sacrifice his son. And to help my children understand that and to talk with them about that, boy, they had so many questions when we finished reading that together. Why would God do that, Mommy? Why did God ask for that? Why would he ask that and then come through? And actually, if he asked us to give up our dad, why didn't he rescue him just like he rescued Isaac? And man, this is the stuff that theology is made of. And I don't know how to answer these questions at bedtime, you know? And so I leaned into it and I said, you know what, you guys, your dad could have died 20 years ago when he was in a sledding accident that took his spleen. And that's what kept his body from fighting the infection that happened 4 years ago at Christmas time. He could have died then. But I think that God was thinking that day, if Rob dies today, then there's a girl who won't get to marry him. And if she doesn't marry him, then there's 2 little boys who won't be born. And if Tucker isn't born, and if Tyler isn't born, then the world doesn't get what they can bring. And the world won't get their friendship and their leadership and their influence. And I need them to be born. I need for them to be part of the story that I'm writing. And so I'm going to rescue their dad, who's this 14-year-old kid, and I'm going to give him 20 more years. And they're not going to feel like it's very much, but it's essential because I need for them to be born too. And so we talked about how we don't understand what God has taken away, but we understand what he's given us. We understand some of that. My boys are very resilient and beautiful and deep and thoughtful and amazing young men. I don't even feel like I can call them little boys anymore because they are well on their way to becoming these men that have my respect. So that's who they are. We are still figuring this out. I've written another book, and it's coming out in May of 2015. It's called Let's Pretend We're Normal. And it's the adventures in rediscovering how to be a family. And it's kind of what you're asking, like, okay, so what now? Like, what did we do next? When the crisis faded and once we came to terms with the fact that he's not coming back and this is who we are now, how did we create normal again? How did we create a new normal? And that's where we are. We're in a process every day of creating our new normal.
Well, what an amazing, insightful answer to give to those boys of yours as you're talking about. If he would have died when he was 14, you wouldn't be here. To just turn that crisis around, to have a paradigm shift, to suddenly see the goodness of God. I mean, what was the response to that?
You know, honestly, Susie, they both really cried. I held them. And we just snuggled up together and we prayed together and I let them hear me ask God the questions of the things I don't understand. And I said, God, do you see us here right now? Do you see us that I have these 2 children who don't understand? And I am a girl who doesn't understand. Can you show us? And I asked him for a blessing that I said, I know, God, that you've already blessed us, but I know that every gift comes from you, and I ask that you will shine your light on us right now as we humble ourselves and come before you and say, thank you for giving us life, and do you see that we're having a hard time? And so it was a really holy and sacred moment for me with my boys to be able to say, listen, guys, I'm glad that God gave you life. I'm glad that God gave me marriage. Our hearts are so broken. What do we do next? So to be able to be real with them was a gift in itself.
Well, Tricia, I just love who you are. I love your heart, and I love the way that you love God and your family and loved your husband, and such an amazing lesson for us all. And I'm wondering, as we wrap up, if you would pray for that couple who's just hit the dry spell and they don't feel the emotions of love, but I know that if one of those in the marriage died, this stuff would come back to them. And just pray for insight even now while they still have each other.
I will, yes. God, I thank you so much for the gifts that you give, and I ask forgiveness right now on my own, but on behalf of the people who are listening, for the times when you give us a gift that we just don't even see, that we don't even recognize it, God. Those are from you also. And I wonder how that makes you feel. I just wonder how you feel when you give us something and we completely miss the joy. So, God, I pray right now for the couple or the bride or the groom or the relationship right now that is on the brink of an impasse or on the brink of a crossroads where they must decide. God, I pray that you will give them enlightenment, that you will show them what is true, and you will show them the gifts that you've given them. Show them where they are and what is true so that they might not have to wait until it's gone before they understand how beautiful it truly was. God, you are the giver of everything that is good and perfect. And I pray, God, that you will meet us where we are. I thank you for grace that is sufficient and that is deep and wide. Thank you, Jesus. Amen.
Amen. God bless you, dear sister. I look forward to having you back where we can talk again.
Great. Thank you, Susie. God bless you.
Be blessed. Today. We've got a couple copies left of Tricia's book. If you want to email me if you were impacted by this conversation, email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Put in the subject line, and life comes back. Up next for hour two, I'm going to talk about what it means to be wise. Stay tuned. I'm expecting your calls, all right? Don't go away. We'll be right back.